Good evening again. James McCanney here with my Science Hour, going right into the show tonight. The main science topic tonight, I will be doing some orbital analysis of the newly discovered comet CE2012-S1, and then in parentheses, ISON, which represents the Russian observatory which discovered the comet apparently a couple weeks ago. At least it was announced a few weeks ago. I'm not really sure. Comets like this, I have a feeling these have been observed for a long time, but that was the public announcement. But I've done some orbital analysis on this comet, and it turns out it's very, very interesting. I think you're going to, and this is going to go on for the next year, over a year, year and a half, actually about 2 years. So I've actually created a subpage on my homepage. If you scroll down a little ways, you'll find the subpage dedicated to Comet CE2012-S1, it is called. And, anyway, you'll hear about that as the main science topic tonight. A lot of interesting detail regarding this comet. And by the way, later tonight, I'll be a guest on Coast to Coast AM, the first hour in many, many times. I got a call today from producer Tom Danheiser and asked me to be on the show to do some commentary on the sun. There's a couple of big sunspots that are visible from ground-based observers on Earth. And by the way, never look at the sun without proper filtering equipment. Or if you take pictures with a camera, never look through your camera. We always have to qualify that because a lot of people aren't aware that the tremendous amount of energy coming off the sun can damage your eyes. So never look directly at the sun. But tonight I'll be on First Hour Coast to Coast with host George Norrie talking about those sunspots. And just to give you an update, if you are not able to listen tonight, they're quite benign. They are really not doing anything in the sun in general as we move into this current solar cycle, which is going to estimated peak around the year early 2014. That's another interesting issue that will come into play with this comet. Solar peak around 2014. So at any rate, I'm just making some notes here as I'm talking. But right now we have very low solar wind pressure, as if you say you had a garden hose and you put your hand in front of it and you measured the pressure on that hose. The solar wind pressure right now is very low, almost zero. And it has been doing this for quite some time. Right now we've got a storm developing in the mid-Atlantic, and it is just sitting there. It's just really not doing much. We've had the strangest hurricane season that I ever can remember. And by the way, our good old friend, Tropical Storm Nadine, which I talked about, was it last week or the week before, is just wandering around the North Atlantic, mindlessly wandering around. It continues to wander around the North Atlantic, just going loop-de-loop, north, south, east, west, just la-di-da, just hanging around the North Atlantic. So I just think that's almost comical at this point, because these storms dissipate, go away. There's nothing holding that storm there in that place or to move around. It's just a little west of the Canary Islands. So I get the suspicion that somebody is playing with their laser satellite up there, just having a little target practice, so to speak. But at any rate, there is a major storm, what appears to be a major storm, developing in the East Atlantic, moving westward off of Africa. But it is just sitting there. It's just sitting there. It's kind of like moving around. It looks kind of mean, like it's concentrating and trying to develop an eye. But it's just not doing it. And it's a good example of a Earth weather condition in which there's just not enough energy coming in from the solar conditions around Earth, the solar wind conditions. As I said, the solar dynamic pressure in the solar wind is just about zero. So there's just really not a lot of energy. There's not a lot of change going on. That's another factor that can drive solar influence into our weather systems. None of that happening. So these weather systems are just kind of there. They're not really developing. But as I said, Tropical Storm Nadine, if you go to any of the Atlantic satellite images online, you can see that storm, and then just search on the hurricane paths or the tropical storm activity, and you'll see the Tropical Storm Nadine. It once was a minor hurricane as it passed up through the central Atlantic region, the central Atlantic Ocean, moving north, but it never became much of a storm. But why it keeps wandering around the North Atlantic off of the coast of the Canary Islands, I just can't figure that out. But at any rate, just a quick commentary on the presidential debate last night. My goodness, the people who watch this, all I can imagine is how rock stupid the American public is. To think that somehow these clowns have any intention of solving your problems or doing anything to help the American public or people in foreign countries also. This is not in their agenda. These two clowns are just puppets. They're up there, Howdy Doody and Bob, I think that's what they used to call his buddy, are up there mouthing it back and forth, pretending to somehow. But the bizarre thing is that people actually believe this. I mean, this dog and pony show. Anyway, no more comments on that. It's just a vision of reality that the American public is so stupid that they would sit back and think that this is somehow real. At any rate. Just a quick mention on products and items. The corn, I put this up a couple weeks ago, and we had this fall's, what I would say, allotment of the Dent corn seed, the original Dent corn seed. And I decided, well, just we're going to sell this off this fall. There's not going to be any sale this spring, because who knows what's going to happen. I mean, this, I don't expect after this election, I expect the world to cave in all directions. They're just trying to hold the floodgates back right now. But after the election, then the gloves come off. All the senators, all the, anyway, whatever. But so anyway, for that and other reasons, I just decided to sell off whatever corn is left. And it's $40 for a 10-pound box, and basically this will come priority mail, and it's pretty much gonna run out. I can tell you that. That's all I can tell you. And it's offered $40 plus I think $10 shipping, and only in the United States. So I'm sorry, all you people listening in foreign countries, we will not be shipping any of this to foreign countries. Any of the corn, everything else goes to foreign countries. But the corn will not. And it's going to run out, I can tell you that. So if you want to get in on this, do it now. People are ordering, some people have ordered fairly large quantities because it's a pretty good deal. The original family corn that you would have found on the family farm back in the 1930s or before, this is something I started in 2008. Anyway, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. Go to the webpage to get more detail on that. You can get it free with a $300 order of any of the products, combination of products on the page. And also the calendar. This calendar device has been just, people love that. I'm getting feedback from people who have gotten the calendar. This is the Recalendar Sun Star Clock, and it's emergency survival, but yeah, it's something you can use every day of the week now. But it's a very interesting device. There's nothing like this on the planet. It has all of the information about our solar system, about building a calendar. You can retro-build a calendar back in time. You can build a calendar far out into the future. And if there's a pole shift, you can rebuild the calendar with this. It's the only thing like this on the planet. And it retails for $39.95, and when I look at this, it's printed on a very hard, durable substrate. And then there's some assembly required when you get it, but it's very basic, very simple, something anybody can use. And you set it up, and you look at it on a daily basis and watch the sun, how the sun moves and changes, and understand how our calendar is built around the movements of the Earth in its orbit, etc. How to translate this into watch time or clock time. And then also, as I said, if we ever have a major event, even if it's not a pole shift, even if it's just a man-made or a natural disaster, the one thing that you absolutely need for survival is you absolutely need to recreate the calendar and the time. You have to do this. And so anyway, this little device does it. It's about the size of a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, but it's, like I say, it's on a very durable substrate. You can't bend it, or if you could probably break it if you drove a Sherman tank over it. Let's put it that way. Very durable. It's printed with UV resistant ink, and it's very colorful. It's got anyway a lot of information about our solar system. So you can get two of them. I think it's twice that, $79.90, and that includes free shipping. So anyway, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and don't forget the water filters. And I always forget to mention this. When it comes to water filters, I have the best prices on the Internet. The prices all include free shipping, so... don't be fooled by what appear to be lower prices and then get stuck with a big shipping price. My prices include free shipping to the 50 states. Then there's the pre-filter, a product you will not find anyplace else. You put it on top of your gravity water filter. It fits any of the filters out there commercially. Pre-filters the water, so if you have a lot of minerals or sludge, or if you have radioactivity or oil, whatever pollution you have in your water, it filters it out before it goes into your gravity water filter for a final filter. Anyway, and then all my books and DVDs, etc. Okay, enough of that. On to the comet C2012-S1ISON. And the ISON at the end represents the Russian observatory which discovered this comet. As I said, announced, I think it was around September 24th of this year, so very recent. But let me describe its orbit. Right now, it is beyond the orbit of Jupiter. Jupiter being the biggest, some people call it a planet, I call it a minor star, the biggest object in the solar system aside from our sun. But it's beyond the orbit of Jupiter, and Jupiter is kind of swinging around, and there could be a slight orbital change of this object due to the gravitational influence of Jupiter. But the interesting thing about this comet, it is coming in almost down the line of the planets, so we're going to have some very interesting electrical alignments, and I want to stress electrical. I'm going to go through all of those on tonight's show. And then I'm going to talk about some other issues, including a very close encounter of this comet with the planet Mars. And that's going to happen. I'll talk about all of the dates, etc., that these things are going to happen. And then it comes in, if it doesn't have its orbit changed, which I'll talk about that also. If it does not have its orbit changed when it comes by Mars, its plan is that on what's the date? November 29th, 2013, just about a year from now, a little over a year from now, it will pass within only 2 million miles of the sun. Now, I will clarify that this is a big comet. It's already very visible beyond the orbit of Jupiter, And these comets can fizzle out. We've had what have been announced in the past, huge comets that fizzled out. You never can really predict. But I think this comet, my personal opinion, is this comet is going to be a show and a half. This is going to beat July 4th fireworks on Manhattan Island. So at any rate, let me start going through these scenarios. And I'll quick go through them, and then I'll go back and talk a little bit more in detail. And, of course, this is reflective of my plasma discharge comet model. And already the disinformation, the government-paid outreach people are out there trying to pound the press and the Internet. Oh, this is just one of those fluffy little snowballs. Don't expect it to do anything. But they're missing, even in their own realm, they're missing some very important things, including this interaction, this close interaction with Mars. Let me just preface this by saying this is not a dirty snowball. Comets in general are not dirty snowballs. And this object, I think, is probably fairly big. It could be a fraction of the size of our moon or larger. It could be the size of our moon. We don't really have good data because NASA hides all that data. I'm pretty much about 99.999% sure that NASA and the boys already knew about this object long ago. But finally, they had to release it, so they released it through the Russian observatory as the official release this September, because they'd look pretty stupid if this thing started coming in past the orbit of Jupiter and started erupting into the night sky. And by the way, this is projected to be visible, could be as bright as much as 15 times as bright as the full moon, by some projections. So this, like I say, could be quite the show. We also have some good broadside views of this comet where we can see the sunward spike. And I'm suspecting that if any comet has the horns, the things that the ancients talked about, the horns and the sunward spikes, that this comet is going to have them. There's ancient references, and these are proton effects that are on the sunward side of the comet. It makes the comet look like it has bull horns. And these references are very biblical. But, okay, let me just mention this too, that unless this comet has its orbit changed, it does not pose a direct threat to Earth. We're going to get some pretty nasty weather out of this at a couple of points in the comet's orbit. I think a couple of the other planets are going to see some significant things going on. But as far as, like, doomsday Earth, no. This comet, as far as I can tell right now, is not going to be the death of the Earth. In fact, it'll probably pass through relatively benign. We're going to have some pretty major solar flaring, I suspect, when it comes and starts approaching the sun, discharging that local solar capacitor. I think we're going to have some fairly significant solar flaring. And by the way, this is going to be at the very peak of the solar maximum. So that could come into play, too, where the solar maximum, the solar energy, the sun itself is pumped up in energy. And all of a sudden, here we are with a comet, a major league comet. Now, remember that most comets pass through the solar system, come in and out in a short period of time. And this one is rather strange. In a short period of time, meaning a couple days, maybe a week, they're in and out, by, they're gone, and that's all you see. This comet is going to be visible for the period of a couple of years, once it starts working in past Jupiter, well, at least the better part of a year. Then let's go back to Hale-Bopp, comet in the mid to late 90s, was visible for a period of 6 years in the sky. And so I remember when I was talking about the Moses event and the fact that Venus, the comet, was apparent in the sky for 40 years, and actually much longer. It was probably more like 600 years that it dominated the sky moving around. But through that period, after the Earth encounter, it lit their way. It was the stick of fire in the sky that lit their way. That's how bright it was. It was lit up like a light bulb because of the electrical discharge from the sun passing through the comet. And so this comet, too, they say is going to be bright. It could light up so you could see it in daylight. So this is going to be a real show. I want to prepare you for this. So get your popcorn, get your soda pop ready. This is going to be a big show, I believe. I hope it is, because there are so many aspects of this that prove the plasma discharge comet model, my comet model that I've been talking about, of course, forever. It proves so many aspects of this, and once the public sees this, they're going to go, I don't care what kind of propaganda NASA throws out or how many new outreach people they put in the Naval Observatory or at Discover Magazine, the public's going to look up at this thing and go, this baby ain't no ice ball. Thank you, NASA, but it ain't no ice ball. Thank you very much. And that's going to happen all over the world. All over the world this is going to happen. So at any rate, okay, let me start going through these scenarios. And I'll be talking through this, and I'd suggest that you listen to this show and then re-listen to it, maybe even once or twice, a second time, third time. Okay, let's start out where this comet is right now. It's coming in it's beyond the orbit of Jupiter. It's coming into the solar system, but very close to the plane of the planets. It's going to drop down below the sun and then swing out eventually above the sun, but go back almost out on the same path. Some people call it a parabolic orbit. I've seen other people refer to it as a hyperbolic orbit. But in any case, the comet is a comet that we believe has been here for the first time. Usually these comets come in and out and leave pretty quickly, but this one is not. It's moving relatively slowly. So that's very interesting. But at any rate, as it moves in, June 1st, 2013 is the first time it's going to have any kind of interaction with an inner solar system object, and that object is going to be the planet Venus. It has a very nice electrical alignment, and Venus will come around. Venus is something we can watch in the SOHO satellite. We can also see it in the morning sky. So this is a time when we will possibly see Venus ignite into cometary activity. It's going to get a pretty good jolt electrically from this comet that is still relatively far away, but in a direct electrical alignment with Venus as Venus swings around in its orbit. Before that, now, look at that. That's almost, not quite a year. That's about 8 months away from us right now. But June, from now to June, this comet has the potential to slow down quite a bit. There's two major factors between now and June 1st, 2013 that could affect this comet and its orbit. It has the tail drag. And, of course, that's something that NASA and the boys don't figure into their models because they don't know about it. They think that comets may have small perturbations or changes in their orbits. But if this comet is big, and we saw it happen to Hale-Bopp, that on a daily basis, this comet orbit will start to change significantly, slowing it down and dropping it into a lower orbit. And so that could mean a difference in its interaction with Mars. Also, Jupiter is going to give it a little bit of a tug. Jupiter is fairly far away, but still could pull it back in its orbit. So we could see some slight orbital changes in this before it reaches Mars. Then on August 18th, 2013, it will have a very nice, almost perfect electrical alignment with the little planet Mercury as Mercury whips around in its orbit around the Sun. There again, we have very good visibility of Mercury at this time, so it's possible we could see some major electrical discharge activity around the planet Mercury, cometary-type activity. So those are some effects that could affect the comet, and we could see on or around those dates, so June 1st, 2013, or August 18th, 2013, some significant increase, some jolts, some reverberations, some feedback loops, so to speak, with the comet around those dates as Venus and Mercury enhance that alignment. And so here's what's going on. When a planet which has its own electrical discharge in the solar capacitor, when that aligns electrically with the very long discharge from the comet, all of a sudden you extend, you couple these together, and they become a discharge over a very vast distance in the solar system. And so now you have a lot more power flowing down that current chain coming back to the Sun. So at any rate, the point is that those two interactions could kick off the comet to have quite a bit of more energy, some sunward spike activity, and I think this comet is going to show us some multiple tails. That's an effect only talked about by the ancients on the very big comets, not only the horns of the bull type of activity and the sunward spike. By the way, I have some pictures of this, some good pictures of these ancient comet descriptions that were drawn actually in the past down to us. I have some of those in my Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, so if you happen to have that book, take a look in there and you will see some of the ancient drawings of these type of comets. In fact, the cover of that book has a very good ancient drawing of a helical sunward spike reminiscent of high electrical currents in a magnetic field. Okay, so those are the initial interactions with inner solar system planetary objects. On October 3rd, or thereabouts, this comet is going to have an extremely close interaction with the planet Mars. It'll be just above Mars, just a little bit, but if Jupiter has anything to do with this, Jupiter could pull that comet down a little, plus the tail drag. And here, let me preface this by saying that there are some simulations on the Internet. These are put out by JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and it shows the projected orbit of the comet. These simulations, these calculations, these computer orbital simulations are done with the following assumption. They are done assuming that this body only interacts with the Sun and nothing else. So they don't include Jupiter, they don't include any tail drag, they don't include any augmentation of the tail drag and activity of the comet once these interact with Venus and Mercury in those two interactions, and they do not include any gravitational interaction with the planet Mars once it starts getting close to Mars. Now, Mars at that point in time will be in the morning sky, and so we will not be able to see that from planet Earth. It'll be in the morning sky. But if this comet is big enough, there could be some observers with amateur telescopes that could actually see this and see the cometary interaction. But, of course, nighttime sky is best. So I am working, let's put it this way, to make sure that I can get some kind of data from a remote observatory, let's put it that way, to see how this comet is interacting with Mars electrically. The ancients talk about the lightning bolts traveling between, for example, the big comet Venus, the proto-planet Venus, the comet, the big comet that moved through the solar system, they're very specific about the comet zapping other planets and zapping Earth, zapping Mars. They saw Jupiter levels across the sky towards the other planets. And by the way, this is not technology. Back, it was in the 90s, military had some satellites up, and Earth took a major league electrical discharge, pure electrons, from the planet Jupiter. And they were surprised, couldn't figure out what was that. But, of course, all of this is predicted in my theoretical, which is how the electrical interactions in the solar system work. But as this object moves closer to Mars, and it's going to be Mars basically at what you would call potential, all of this, but as it passes after. But the potential difference between this cut electrically and Mars is going to be enormous, eventually be lost from some of that. So I'd understand Mars, little Mars, companion planet out there, they're into the coma of a period of time. So major electrical interactions at that time. This is where the pavement, the tires meet the road, because let me talk about what can happen gravitationally. Now, this is the key to a lot of understanding we're going to gain. As let's say that this comet is small, little teeny, 7-10 miles across. Say that the nucleus is only that size. Then the comet orbit will change significantly with this gravitational interaction with Mars. If the comet nucleus is larger, as it gets larger, and if it's larger than this small 7-10 miles, if it's 100 or 1,000 miles across, which it very well could be since it's already a big comet out beyond Jupiter, we could be talking something that's significantly close to Mars in mass. Okay? Mars could have a very big terraforming interaction where Mars pulls atmosphere out of the comet, and all of a sudden Mars is going to be left with an enormous atmosphere of water. It could terraform Mars overnight. This is a major league possibility, because Mars is going to be right there. We know that Earth had a major league interaction with a comet in the last 10,000 years, and we had the ancients talk about this, the influx of oil, the naphtha, the influx of rocks. So this happened during the past 10,000 years on Earth. The ancients talk about this. Mars, if that object is smaller, the nuclear mass is smaller than Mars, then the surface gravity of Mars will be greater, and when that electrical discharge starts to interact, Mars will win the tug of war. And what that means is that Mars will gain atmosphere. We don't know how much. It's hard to predict. Now, let's say that nucleus is about the same size as Mars. Mars will still gain. But what happens if the nucleus of this comet is bigger than Mars, has higher surface gravity? It could strip Mars of its atmosphere completely, rip off the entire faint atmosphere of Mars and leave it as a planet with no atmosphere at all. Not only that, but as in these scenarios that you can build theoretically, if this object is anywhere remotely close to the size of Mars, it's going to change the orbit of Mars. Mars will have possibly mountain building. It could have terraforming events. We have very good data on the surface of Mars, so we would be able to actually measure and see the effects of a large body passing by another celestial object, which we have immense amounts of data. Mars could have those volcanoes, Olympus Mons, the other two big volcanoes, and many other smaller volcanoes. Those could be going off big time. Remember that the peak of Olympus Mons on Mars, the big volcano on Mars, sits up above the top of its atmosphere. If that baby blows off, then you're going to see you could see this moving out into outer space. Actually, a volcanic eruption And this was, all of these things are going to be things that could happen the first time any of this type of thing would be observed in outer space, in major interactions. But to, if this object approaches Mars in mass, if it's about the same size as Mars or larger, you're going to see the orbit of Mars change. If it is significantly bigger, then we're going to see the orbit of Mars change radically. Mars could lose its two moons. There are a lot of things that could happen here. And if you look at the web pages, the standard mouthpiece web pages on the internet, in fact, NASA is nothing but quiet. There is, it's screaming with silence. So I think this is rather comical, because we as a civilization, as a population on Earth, 6 billion people are going to be able to see this happen. And I'm suspecting, I mean, it's hard to say, but my belief is that this object that's in the center of this comet, C2012S1, is fairly significant enough that we're going to see some of these changes, especially electrical discharge. We could see some scarring on the planet Mars due to electrical discharges, as I said. And by the way, my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, has, I think it's about 8 high-definition plates of the surface of Mars. The entire surface of Mars is reproduced with high-definition plates of the planet Mars. So we would be able to, everybody out there could compare the current surface of Mars with what it looks like afterwards. We could see some significant hurricane activity in the atmosphere of Mars as the oil and naphtha and water and ammonia and all of the other hydrocarbons, nitrogen-hydrogen compounds, all of these compounds that are in comet tails come raining into the planet Mars. We could see some major terraforming activity going on the planet Mars. This interaction is extremely important, and there's no way in this one show I can include all of the details on what could happen on the planet Mars. So we're going to have a very good before set of data on Mars, a lot of data. And then we will be able to get the after data on Mars and see what happened. I mean, could we have mountain building if this object is big enough? Potentially, now you have to understand orbital dynamics are very difficult to understand. So this comet is going to be moving in almost directly towards the Sun. Mars is coming around in its orbit, and the way that we see it now, Mars will actually pass in front of this object and a little bit below. But Mars will be pulling down on this object, so it's going to sweep down. And it's very difficult to predict because of the tail drag of the other interactions going on. It's very difficult to predict where all of these objects are going to end up. Where will Mars end up? Where will the moons of Mars end up? Where will the comet end up? And, of course, NASA does have this kind of data. They have the ability to measure the nucleus size, the size of the nucleus, of this comet using the large radio telescopes. And the way they do this is they send out a beam, a radio beam, just like radar, and when it bounces back, they can measure. They did that with Venus back in the 1970s. They bounced the radar beam off of the planet Venus and determined that it was heavily cratered. That's how much detail they can get off of a radar pulse going out to an object like this. So clearly, NASA has the capability of measuring the size of this nucleus, but like I say, they're about as silent as a Christmas mouse about all of this. So they obviously know how big this thing is, but they're not saying. They're not talking. And that's true of Hale-Bopp, too. Back in the Hale-Bopp days, they had the techniques, the technology easily to measure directly with radio the size of Hale-Bopp. So why all of the estimates of 40 miles across or whatever? It doesn't add up. So what happens in my ability to look at what technology is available, and then, like I say, it's not what NASA says, it's what they don't say. They have the ability to measure the size of this nucleus right now, and they are quiet as a church mouse, not saying a word. They just have their little outreach people out there, oh, it's a dirty snowball in this icy little wander, this and this, this snowy little object that, meandering through the solar system. No, I think their show is coming to an end, folks. And the whole world, 6-point-some billion people, are all going to look up in the sky and know that NASA has been lying through their teeth. So I think it's great. I think it's great. This comet, we've seen many, many other comets come by the sun, do things, Comet Lovejoy going through the solar atmosphere, coming out the other side. Nucleus visible with the naked eye from Earth, coming around the other side of the sun, bigger than the planet Mercury, and they say it's a whopping 600 feet across. You know, you can't even laugh. I mean, it's pretty serious business. But the thing you have to understand, when I criticize NASA, you know, sure, they're liars, they're covering up data. But what's worse is they are setting up the world's population for a big hurt, because the population of the world should be getting ready, instead of paying interest on their bank loans. NASA is hiding this data, and it's really, really damaging, and it's going to be very damaging to the population of the world. So I wouldn't want to be a NASA scientist walking up and down the street if there's ever a Planet X object that starts coming into the solar system, because they're not going to be the most popular people on the planet at that point, because everybody's going to know they lied, they covered up for one reason, and that is to give shelter to the world banking community and corporations that keep operating this world with a dollar bill. Okay, so I'm on to the next set of scenarios. Okay, I'll be talking more about this Mars interaction, but as I said, it's really going to be an amazing, absolutely amazing interaction before and after. That's once again around October 3rd, 2013. Then we move on to about a month and a half later. This is if the orbit doesn't change. And I think it's going to change. I think there's going to be some knockdown, drag-em-out type of interactions going on between this comet and Mars. But if it doesn't, it will then interact on November 29th with the Sun, coming within 2 million miles of the Sun. So in terms of solar system distances, how much is 2 million miles? Well, the distance from us to the Moon is about 250,000 miles. So 8 times the distance from Earth to our Moon. Okay, if you can imagine that. The distance from us to the Moon, 8 times that. That's how close this object is going to come to the Sun. Now, if you go out on a warm afternoon and the Sun is shining, and you hold up your hand and you feel that energy coming from the Sun, we're, 93 million miles from the Sun. We're a long ways away. And the closer, say you get halfway to the Sun, the increase in energy on your hand would be 4 times as much. If you get a third, another halfway of that distance to the Sun, now your energy on your hand is 16 times. So it's kind of an exponential increase in energy. So if you're talking 2 million miles from the Sun, not only is there just a tremendous amount of heat coming off the Sun, raw X-rays, but you have the solar wind, And just to think of comets going through the sun and surviving and coming out the other side like Lovejoy and then creating a comet again, and imagine, and this is a 600-foot wide little ice ball with a little bit of fluffy snow on the surface. It's so beyond absurd. You can see the absurdity level of what NASA is trying to pawn off on the public. But at any rate, this comet is going to pass within 2 million miles of the sun. And now, the other thing is, by this time, we should have a good handle on the size of this nucleus. But my guess is that the interaction with Mars is going to change the orbit quite a bit. It's hard to say exactly where this thing is going to end up. And I, like I say, if I could go through computer simulations and I could go through hand calculations, which I've done, and it's very difficult because we don't know what the tail drag is going to do. When these comets light up and increase their tail drag, when they become more active, increase the tail drag. Let me just explain tail drag briefly. In the discharge comet model, the plasma discharge comet model, what I show is that the nucleus of the comet is negatively charged, and it's drawing in the positively charged ions and dust that are in the tail. These are being drawn into the nucleus, and with a nucleus that's large like this, it has enough gravitational field to hold that material, so it becomes part of the comet nucleus. It's assimilated by the comet nucleus, held there by gravity. Okay, now you are building up mass, so the comet nucleus pulls on the tail. Well, inversely, by Newton's law, action and reaction, the comet tail pulls on the nucleus, so it slows it down. It's like putting the brakes on. And so as this variable tail drag works on the comet nucleus, it's going to change the orbit of the comet, but it's variable. You can't predict it as it interacts with Venus on June 1st, as it acts with Mercury on August 18th, and all of a sudden you're going to have a big increase in the activity of that comet. How much increase? It's impossible to say. Nobody, I don't care if you're an alien from another solar system with a lot of experience or if you're an earthling with military supercomputers, you cannot tell what that interaction is going to be. You can't predict it. It's unpredictable. And by the way, that's why the ancients called comets the lawless ones, because they didn't obey the standard rules. You could not predict their orbits. So at any rate, I don't know if it's really going to get to the sun on November 29th. I would be very surprised if it does. But if it does, then we've got the issue of it doing another thing just like Comet Lovejoy. Will it go through the solar atmosphere? Will it come out the other side, reform a comet? And at that point, as it comes out the other side of the sun for that brief moment before it reforms a comet, before it discharges the solar capacitor locally and starts to reform a comet, we will get a glimpse, once again, at the raw comet nucleus. And we'll be able to see the physical size of that object. Okay, passing on, if that happens, and if the orbit has not been significantly changed in this amount of time and all these different interactions, on January 15th, 2014, Earth, Venus, a full moon, and the comet are going to have an amazingly direct electrical alignment. So that could have some January hurricane activity. We could have some, you know, 5-6 major hurricanes in the Pacific and Atlantic all at the same time, because this, remember, is a big comet. Back in the 90s, I think it was 1999, I predicted major hurricane activity in early September, about September 6th, due to an interaction with a comet called Comet Lee. And I was right on the money. That's when that was our friend Hurricane Floyd, as I recall. So at any rate, and five other of his best friends wandering out in the Atlantic, they're all forming at the same time. They were like coming in like bowling balls. So at any rate, the January 15th, 2014, Earth-Venus full moon and comet 2012 S1, all in perfect electrical alignment. But as I said, take that part with a grain of salt, because a lot of things could happen before then to change that cometary orbit. So as you can see, this comet is going to be very interesting. And as I said, at this point, I don't see it as causing the end of the world. I wouldn't want to be living on Mars. I wouldn't want to be a Martian at this point in time. Because that comet is going to, it's going to have some major interactions with the planet Mars. There's just no way around it. It's going to, Mars is going to be within its coma for a short period of time, and those interactions, electrical interactions, and I think this would be a chance too for some amateur radio astronomers who can see in the daytime. They don't have to worry about nighttime sky. I'd like to see some amateur radio astronomers pose their equipment to the Mars-Comet interaction. It'll be early in the morning on that morning of October 5th, 3rd. It could start as early as late September, those interactions, and carry all the way through to mid-October. But you know, with even moderate radio telescope equipment, you could detect those electrical discharges, that FM frequency electrical activity that would be going on between the comet and Mars. So that would be very interesting to see. That would give some amateur radio astronomers something really to dig their teeth into, something very exciting to do some real work, because I guarantee you that the big astronomy telescopes, the professional ones, will be trained on them, but you will never see the data. But it's going to be enough of a significant enough interaction electrically where the comet interacting with Mars will produce a good deal of electrical noise. And so it would be good to have the various amateur astronomers probably pick a frequency, and let's divide the frequency bands up so this is organized. Go all the way through from the low frequencies to the high radio frequencies, and get a good sampling of data, radio noise data, as this comet interacts with Mars. And like I said, it'll be in the morning sky. Unfortunately, I wish it were something where everybody would be able to see this with just the visible part, because Mars would be a fantastic object to watch as this comet. Because, by the way, remember the ancients, and Velikovsky brings us this, that the ancients saw Mars as a blue planet. It was a water planet before the interaction with Venus. And as they saw Venus come by Mars, it first reached out like with a snake-like protrusion, and the jaws of the snake wrapped around Mars and eventually ripped its atmosphere and oceans away, leaving the red hulk of a dry planet that we see today. And I've talked about Mars gaining and regaining its atmosphere. I've talked about that in many other shows. I talked about that in my books. I talk about that on the most recent CD I've released, with the physics of ancient celestial disasters. But Mars lost its atmosphere recently. I always get a kick out of NASA when they, like recently I saw a headline, it just makes me kind of roll my eyes, but NASA says they've confirmed that there has been water on Mars. The first solid confirmation, and it's so absurd, because if you look at the pictures of Mars, there are meandering riverbeds. You look at the erosion on Olympus Mons. You see that Olympus Mons sat in an ocean and had the sides of the mountain chewed away just like the Pacific volcanic islands are chewed away by the constant wave activity, you can see where it would slough off down into the ocean, just like in the Pacific islands. I mean, all of this is obviously on Mars. When the recent lunar lander or the Mars lander landed on Mars, what did you see? You saw rolling hills in the distance. That's all water erosion, everybody. Water, water, water. Mars was a water planet. And recently, within a number of thousands of years BC, it had that water removed by a close passing comet. So what's going to happen to Mars? This is going to be a real eye-opener for a lot of people. And, you know, what's NASA going to say? They don't have control over that. But I'm sure they're going to still keep saying, well, that's just a little dirty snowball, because that's what they got to say. That's what they're paid to say. They get their paycheck for saying that. If they didn't, they wouldn't get their paycheck. So at any rate, let me just spin off of this topic. Remember to go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and all of the information is there for the different types of ordering. The seed corn will run out soon. So if you're interested in that, you better order soon. And it's when it's gone, it's gone. That's all there is. There will not be any sale of that next spring. The calendar, like I say, that has been very popular. I do not have a picture of this on the webpage, and that's a very good reason for that. And my fans, my base of people who follow me trust what I do, so they know when they get it that it's going to be real, it's going to be something important. And this calendar, the recalendar device, is very, you know, well, when you see it, there's for $39.95, you're getting a tremendous amount of information, very usable information in a very simplified format. And so the calendar, it's for the people who want to know, the people who want to rebuild the calendar to have a timepiece in case of disaster using either the sun or the stars. So I'm just about out of time here. I just want to thank basically my wonderful audience out there. I get to talk to these people somewhat every week. I get to talk to a few people out there, and so I know I don't have the biggest audience in the world, but they're certainly the best, and that's all I could ask for. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.